You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident finalist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_data. Well, the goal of today remains what it was going to be, but not in the way that I thought it was going to be. I want to approach today in the spirit of going through draft grades, like grading everybody, blah, blah, blah. The more I do this, the more I realize how unserious these draft grade people are. Partially because when you look at their grades, you can't help but roll their eyes. JJ sent me this sort of aggregated thing of everybody's grade. Not everybody's, but they put together, I don't know, 15, 20 different grades and then, you know, put out a total grade. I think they put it in the format of a GPA or something. I don't know. Which makes sense because they give you like A grades, B grades. But the Bears ended up with the second highest. And I'm sorry. And we can go through that if you want. That is insanity to me. For many reasons, it's absolutely insane, but we don't need to dive headfirst into that. What I want to do is kind of just walk through why, rather than just being stuck and saying, I don't know what the podcast is going to be, we're going to walk through why I'm stuck. Every time I've ever tried to do like GM grades, draft grades, whatever, it is a failure. And, if you ever think like you have a pretty good formula, send it to me. I will tell you why it's stupid. Because I promise you, there's no good way to do this. It's impossible. Because every time I take a step, I have to stop and go, nope, that doesn't work. Nope, that doesn't work. Nope, that doesn't work. Where do I even begin? One of the things that seems obvious to me at this point is that there are no rules that can be applied across 32 teams in all situations. The unfortunate reality is if you really want a fully comprehensive grade of how good of a job a team did, you have to dig into that specific team, their situation, the picks they have, how they got the picks, why they have the picks, the needs that the team has, all of that stuff. The only sort of universal truths that I can think of at this point would be things like trades, right? We can look at the trade and see if maybe that was a good trade. But even then, we've got to kind of take things into its context. For example, if you overpaid, but you overpaid for a quarterback, did you really overpay? If you overpaid for a running back, probably overpaid. If you overpaid for a running back that wasn't a need on your team, which I doubt that's ever happened in the history of the universe, but that's additional context where you could probably say, okay, I don't think that was a good trade. Bottom line is we need some kind of a massive IBM computer to process the amount of data required to actually determine whether or not somebody did a good job. Why don't we just start with the Green Bay Packers, right? Let's just go through a couple different broad strokes, things that the Packers did that could be construed as positive and could be construed as negative, and kind of walk through why it's complicated to give definitive answers on some of these things. Number one. The amount of picks the team has is a positive. As much as Bears fans and apparently everybody that gives draft grades wants to pretend it's not a positive or a factor, it is a factor. However, how you acquire those picks also matters. I give Brian Gutekunst massive credit for his ability to slowly and painfully accumulate picks, whether that was through the Aaron Rodgers trade, through the Rasul Douglas trade, through various trade backs, to just slowly and, as I said, painfully acquire a bunch of picks, because more at-bats is one of the best things that you can do. However, if you acquire a massive pile of picks, because let's just say you had the number one overall pick and you traded back and you acquired a bunch of picks, I can give you credit for potentially making a good decision to trade and determine whether or not the trade was a good value. That's the best I can do. But I'm not going to give you credit for accumulating picks because you built a team that sucks, because that is actually a net negative. So you don't get credit for massive amounts of picks. You see how just something simple as far as a formula of having lots of picks cannot be either a positive or a negative. You could have even acquired them by a trade back that was a bad trade. You may have turned one pick into two picks, but you undervalued what you gave away, and so it was a bad trade. And so in that case, having more picks is actually a net negative. So there is no hard and fast rule with the number of picks. However, if you get into each individual situation, you can look at what the Packers did and how they did it and how they acquired the picks. Maybe, you'd have to look at the Aaron Rodgers trade in and of itself. Did you think that was a good value or not? I think generally speaking, considering the Packers were determined to have been in an impossible situation in which they would get nothing because they had no leverage, bet you missed that word, it's fair to say that that was a pretty solid value. Same with Rasul Douglas. I think a lot of people were upset at the time until you start to see some of the values of some of the players that have gone other places and realize that NFL teams generally value picks quite highly. And as much as fans appreciate players more than picks, and they look at a guy like Rasul and say, I'm not giving him up for less than a second or something, generally guys like Rasul do not go for even third round picks, which is why Gutekunst decided to do it, because it was an unbelievable value for a player like Rasul Douglas. So as far as the Green Bay Packers are concerned, I would put the massive amount of picks into the win column. And that's when it really gets complicated in terms of, could you just look at it in terms of cumulative value acquired? Well, for the Packers, I would. But it would be somewhat unfair to do that in other situations. Again, if you acquired a ton of picks because of trading back a high pick that you did not earn, in fact, you did the opposite of earn it, you failed miserably is the only reason you got so much surplus value, in part because you're a bad GM that can't assemble a good team. Likewise, you don't want to punish teams that won the Super Bowl or went to the playoffs with having less value, because that's value that was assigned to them by the NFL. It's not something that they did wrong. So again, it becomes impossible to just assign value based on picks, because it just doesn't work. So it really is just who did the best with the hand that they were dealt, but each individual thing is very complicated. And again, it's not necessarily a hand you were dealt. Sometimes it's a hand you earned, and you should get credit for earning it. Then there's the issue of the value of the pick, the value of the pick itself. Now, the Bears are the best example of this because there's a huge split on this. I award the Bears zero credit. I shouldn't even say the Bears. Ryan Poles, zero credit for taking Caleb Williams. Now, it's not a negative that he took Caleb Williams, but what I'm interested in, my question, the thing I'm seeking is, I want to go through the draft and find out which GM, if I get to pick a GM and start a football team with, which GM do I want? And I got to pour through this data. What is it about the Bears selecting Caleb Williams at one that makes me think that that's the guy I got to have? What is it? He made a pick that 32 teams would have made in that exact same situation. There is nothing that I can glean from that I should be impressed by. And the fact that, well, he's going to be a great quarterback and the Bears took a massive... That's irrelevant to me. And you say, well, it was wizardry to get that pick from the Panthers. First of all, it was not wizardry. You got that pick because you had the number one pick, because you were trash. I'm not giving you credit for being such a garbage football team that you had the number one pick and the ability to trade it. Number two, you had the ability to draft a potentially top five quarterback right then and there and chose not to do it. So you failed again. Number three, you did not know the Panthers would get the number one overall pick. In fact, from a statistical standpoint, it was unlikely that they would have the number one pick. So you were garbage and you were lucky and you made a pick that everybody else would have made. What in the world am I supposed to do with that information to think that, yes, Ryan Poles did a very good job? That pick is irrelevant to me. You can only do, I feel like inside the top 10, you can only make bad decisions as far as grades go. At least until we get outside of, let's say, 3 years. Then we can actually determine, okay, is this a good pick based on da 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 da. But even then, if Caleb Williams ends up being what everybody thought Caleb Williams was, why would I give you credit for that? Again, 32 teams would have made the exact same decision. Maybe 30. Maybe there's a couple that would have done something crazy, but I really doubt it. And I'm saying in that situation, in other words, take Brian Gutekunst, put him on the Chicago Bears. In that situation, what would he have done? I think he would have taken Caleb Williams. Again, maybe one or two or three would have taken Jaden Daniels. I don't know. But you can't just go based on, you know, how correct it is. Because, I mean, that won't be determined for a very long time. We can't go based on, like, the presumed value of the pick, because a lot of that has to do with just the pick that you have. You've been handed the number one pick, and again, not for a good reason. And so, obviously, the pick you're making is the pick that is the player that has the presumed highest value. But I'm not just going to transfer that value over to you and make it seem as though you made the most valuable pick. That's not the most valuable pick. Find me the fifth round tackle that's starting. That's the most valuable pick. Go find me a third round pass rusher that ends up being a top 10 pass rusher in the NFL. Those are the picks that I'm talking about. And again, we won't know that until after the fact. So handing out draft grades now is very complicated. You say, what about positional value? That's another complicated subject. Let me tell you why. I think any hard and fast rule where you draw it out to its utmost conclusion, in other words, you follow that rule perfectly. Do you have the best team? If the answer is no, then it's not the best rule. In fact, it's stupid. If you follow the rule perfectly of positional value, you never draft running backs or tight ends or safeties or anything of that matter, which means you're team is going to be terrible. So then it kind of becomes a question of, when is it appropriate to draft safeties? When is it appropriate to draft tight ends and running backs? Is it ever okay to do it in the first round? I don't have an answer to that, but what I do know is I cannot build some kind of a system that penalizes for drafting tight ends and safeties and running backs and guards and centers. I can't do that necessarily. Now, there's probably a way to do it. Again, maybe first round is out of the question. Maybe. I don't know. What if that's best player available, which we got to talk about that as well. What if it's a need compared to not necessarily a need? How do you determine a need? The Packers, for example, loaded up at a lot of positions. You know, getting three different safeties. Is there a line at which you've done too much at a position of not necessarily need? For example, considering, you know, one of the things the Packers have always talked about in terms of best player available is you don't draft for need because you don't necessarily know what your needs are going to be. So by neglecting positions that don't necessarily seem like needs, not saying it was entirely intentional, but that is the result. Should that be docked? Potentially. Or even just forgetting about positional need, maybe the concentration of picks on, you know, a position or a couple positions as opposed to spreading it out for the sake of spreading it out because you don't know. But again, I can't, if you were to ask me to build some kind of a grading scale, I cannot dock somebody for taking positions that are less valuable. Because again, even if you did it where it's like, well, what if it was a grading scale and like tackles are a 9 and linebackers are a 6? Okay, but again, if I just use that scale to draft, I'm just going to draft tackles and quarterbacks. And my team's going to suck, but I'm going to have a great grade. The grade should correlate to building a great team because that's ultimately what I want my GM to do. I want him to build me a great team through the draft. And any grading scale should reflect that. And so, I mean, if we're being completely honest, I mean, we don't need to do this. This is an exercise that doesn't need to be done. It's interesting to go through this process and to really think it through to realize that all those little hard and fast rules, even the ones that we think are the you know, the really intelligent Green Bay Packers rules, I'm like, I don't know. At the end of the day, the only real test is how good of a team you have. You know, you're trading picks for players. You shouldn't do that. Or you're not drafting best player available. You are drafted. Are you building a good team? That's the ultimate grade. Let's talk about best player available real quick. This is kind of the, I think, the last thing that was kind of running through my head. And this one's really hard because I've been hammering this for 7 years. But I'm kind of struggling with it, especially with the caveats that I've been talking about recently in terms of saying, is best player available the right way to actually draft? Here's the reason I say that. If it's possible to simultaneously draft best player available and for need, in which best player available only comes up if you can't draft both best player available and for need, and then you default to best player available, would you rather just ignore need and go 100% best player available, or should you do both? And how you do both is very simple. There's two main components here. Number one, again, it's not a linear board. They don't structure their board in such a way that it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They don't use a vertical board. Well, they probably have a vertical board, but they use a horizontal board, which is they put guys into tiers, and many of them are graded, but they're graded either identical or at least similarly. You know, it might be like I don't know how, if they put grades on guys out of 10 that are like a 7-6-2, do they go to the 100th place, the 10th place? I don't know. But again, let's say you've got one guy graded a 7-6-2 and another guy that's graded a 7-6-1. And one of them, the 7-6-2 is a wide receiver, and the 7-6-1 is a guard. Well, a wide receiver is more positional value, and it's technically higher on our board. But we desperately need a guard. What do you do? What's the right decision? I mean, again, when I go back and look at the exercise that we did a couple weeks ago, where you look at surplus value in terms of the team that you have, where can we make up the most value? Where can I add the most value? The wide receiver is unlikely to add value because he's unlikely to even win a spot on the roster. The guard is going to add a ton of surplus value because we don't have a right guard. The guy that we have, Sean Ryan, is quite bad, and I can look at where he is, and I can look at how much room there is to grow, and the difference between the two is the amount of value that can be added if we draft a solid guard. Why would we not draft the guard? Now, what about a scenario where you have a wide receiver that is a 7-9-0 and a guard that is a 7-4-2? Well, if we have to stay here, then you should draft the wide receiver, right? I'm making up the numbers. I don't know at what point the gap becomes the priority. But we can also trade back. And if we do as long as we have a trade that is at the very least equal value, if not surplus value, then you can trade back and theoretically get the same amount of value spread across two different picks that now maybe align more with need. The only scenarios that I could think where you wouldn't do that is if you had somebody, for example, that was on a higher tier. So let's say, you know, let's just say we went, you know, the tens tier, nines tier, eights tiers, whatever. If we had guys that were in the sevens, but then we had a guy that was an eight and he was a wide receiver, I feel like you should take the wide receiver because he's just on another level. And you always want to take guys that are on another level if you have the opportunity. So you would take them. The other is if you can't trade back. So, you know, again, we've got like a 7-7 and a 7-4-2. Well, I'd like to trade back. Well, nobody's willing to trade or at least offer a good enough amount, or they want me to trade back so far that I could lose all of my, you know, 7-5 to 7-8 range guys. Well, now I need to sit, and I should probably take the guy that is significantly higher as opposed to not drafting the highest value. Now, I can't see their board, so I don't know what exactly they're doing. But the question of, should we be so psychotically attuned to this idea of best player available? And I already kind of debunked that prior to the draft in terms of the Packers don't draft best player available in the sense that it is purely psychotically, robotically best player available. And I said, prior to the draft, watch. Their best player available draft, which they're going to do, by the way, is strangely going to look a lot like they drafted for need. And that's exactly what they did. This looked like a purely needs-based draft. In fact, I saw Mike Hebbering, Packer superfan, say, I don't want anybody to ever talk to me about best player available drafting. Well, I mean, you can't yell at me, Mike, because I told you beforehand that this was going to happen, and I told you that it was still going to be best player available drafting because they're doing both. The bottom line is you structure the draft so that the best player available just so happens to be a need. And again, because there's a pile of guys, there's probably a safety and a wide receiver and a tight end and a quarterback sitting there, what are you going to do? I'm taking the safety. Because look, I can't ignore the fact that I don't even have safeties good enough to field right now. You know, as much as I want to be a purist and you know, only best player available and I'm just a freaking robot. Again, I do think to some degree that is a losing strategy. We have to acknowledge reality to some degree. Now, did the Packers overdo it? Maybe. Maybe they did overdo it. I mean, I wouldn't have hated seeing maybe a wide receiver. Edge rusher would have been cool. Defensive tackle. We don't really have any sort of quote-unquote one techniques or run defending guys, in my opinion. We don't have any that are, I mean, really very good. So again, having 32 draft grades within 12 hours or 24 hours of the draft is so pathetic to me. It's so absolutely pathetic to me. And then seeing that almost everybody had the Bears really high is just stupid. The Bears didn't have a good draft. Now, I want to go through and kind of give my thoughts on some of these drafts. I've made my position very well known on the Chicago Bears, and I will go through it in detail after the break. But I want to at least go through the NFC North and try to give a as best as I can an unbiased view. It's going to sound very biased with the Bears, but I just... Listen, I called it out on the stream. I said, I hope they do X, Y, and Z, and they did exactly what I wanted because I thought it was the dumb thing to do. Anyways, why don't we take our first break? We'll come back and kind of take a little gander at the NFC North. Again, I would like to try to create some kind of a standard so that I can appear to be unbiased. Ideally, the best way to do it is to come up with a standard first and then apply it to the draft. So you're kind of doing it blind, but I just haven't found a way to do that because you really have to just go in independently, individually, and kind of piecemeal these. So we'll see if we ever get to that. We probably won't, but we'll take a break. We'll be right back. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So US Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/built for us.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right, let's do the Chicago Bears. Now, here's the bottom line. I think the vast majority of people, the way that they do their grades or whatever, is who got better? And we don't even ask any of these questions that matter. For example, we're not even going to acknowledge the fact that the Bears have four picks and why they have four picks. We're just going to say who used their picks to get better. And so, well, we have a team that doesn't have a quarterback and sucks, and then they got a quarterback that we all think is great, therefore, greatest pick in the draft. I mean, yeah. And so then I come in talking about the value of that pick and why it's not all that impressive and da-da-da-da. People get all mad. Let me just draw a parallel here. The Bears were handed a test with the answers already filled in. And I'm coming in going, bro, I don't care. Like, but they aced the test. Okay, true, but I don't necessarily think this student is super smart. And they didn't exactly earn the A.
Yeah, but they got an A.
Okay, sure. Look, I'm not saying it's a bad pick. If they had taken Tyler Newbin with that pick, yeah, that would suck. But again, you can only have a bad pick. I don't think you can have a good pick with the number one pick. It's just the pick. It's handed to you. It's gift wrapped to you. The NFL just gave you a quarterback because you suck. That's it. That's all that happened. So you know what you get for that? Something that is perfectly adequate, not good, not bad. It's a C. It's a C. Then they took Roma Dunze at 9. I'm sorry, that's not a good pick. I didn't say Roma Dunze is not a good player. I said it's not a good pick. The Bears had 4 picks. They needed to trade that. Roma Dunze is their 3rd wide receiver. And whether or not he becomes wide receiver 1 or 2 is irrelevant to me. Because all that does is push the other guys down. It has the exact same effect. Listen, there are only so many passes that are going to take place. The question is success rate. Success rate, that's it. They already have 2 potentially top 10 wide receivers. I'm guessing the success rate is already going to be astronomically high when you control for the quarterback, because that's an independent variable that has nothing to do with the wide receivers. But from a wide receiver standpoint, what is the failure rate with the wide receivers they already have? It's very low. So what does Roma Dunze add to the success rate of a pass play to the Chicago Bears above what it already would have been? How many plays would they have completely failed yet, except for Roma Dunze? Not a ton. And so if you're looking to add another wide receiver, you could have traded back and still gotten a wide receiver. You needed to do it. This was the wrong decision. Again, that doesn't mean that in 5 years we're not going to look back and go, wow, Roma Dunze is a great player. Maybe, maybe not. Which again, as I've said before, the amount of people coming in saying that I have to admit that Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze are going to be good. I'm sorry, I don't have to. Do you know how hard it's going to be for me to go back and look at top 10 picks that I was told are going to be great that are not? How about the Bears right tackle that was kind of garbage last year? And I argued with Bears fans. It's the exact same argument. Bears fans told me he's going to be a good right tackle. I said, look, he's probably going to be a good right tackle eventually, but I don't know that he's going to be a good right tackle eventually. And I certainly don't know that he's going to be a good right tackle in year one. And oh, you'd have thought I just freaking lit the Pope's house on fire. Guess what? He sucked last year. And I mean, look at Ekemma Kwanu. I don't know if that was last year, year before, whatever. He was what, a top 5 pick? He was a slam dunk. Better than probably any prospect in this year's class, except for maybe Joe Alt. That dude is horrifically bad. What about the Jets tackle? Who's Mekhi Becton? You want to talk about one of the greatest prospects we've ever seen. Dude is terrible and is currently not even a Jet. He's with the Eagles right now. So all I can do right now is look at process. I'm not going to just give you an A because we have to acknowledge that they're going to be great players. First of all, even if I did have to acknowledge they were going to be great players, that does nothing by way of process. Nothing. If it's that slam dunk of a thing, then I can't give you credit for making the selection. But I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to pretend that I can fast forward 3 years and be sure that this is a good pick. I mean, does anybody remember Jackson Smith and Jigba? The hype that guy got? Now, he ended up falling, but I mean, in Jigba, nothing. Quentin Johnston, where is he at? Drake London, he's okay. Jameson Williams, what's up with that guy? What does he have, like 40 yards in those last 2 years? How about Treylon Burks? How about Jahan Dotson? What are Rashad Bateman and Terrace Marshall up to, or Kadarius Toney? I got one. How about Jerry Jeudy or Henry Ruggs? I understand Ruggs, there's some extenuating circumstances, but, you know. I'm sorry, I'm not just going to crown somebody because I'm told they're going to be the... Jerry Jeudy was like the greatest wide receiver prospect we've ever seen in our lives. And Trevor Lawrence, I'm sorry to tell you, was a better quarterback prospect. He's not bad. He seems okay. Maybe someday he'll even be a top 10 quarterback. Who knows? How about Zach Wilson? Did we just forget about Zach Wilson? You know, he was the number 2 overall prospect that year. What's that dude up to? How about Kyle Pitts? How about Justin Fields? He was the number 4 prospect. Trey Lance was number 7. Where did the Bears draft their wide receiver again? Oh yeah, 9. Freaking Ekemma Kwanu. Bryce Young. I mean, come on. Now, listen, the hit rate is relatively high up here. I will grant you that. Again, I'm not saying bad. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I know they're going to be good. So they took a quarterback that was handed to them. They took a wide receiver, which wasn't a need when they should have traded back because they had four picks. That is below a C. I mean, I know everybody would lose their minds if I said D, because how dare you? It's Roma Dunze, blah, 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 even though we just went over this. Fine. A freaking D plus. Then they had no picks in the second round and took Amagaji in the third round. Now, Amagaji, probably the best tackle prospect on the board at the time. I think he was considered a second round pick, went in the third round, so it seems like a good value. Oh, and by the way, you do get dinged for not having a second round pick, or a fifth, or a sixth, or a seventh. But the problem with Amagaji is that your GM flat out came out and said he's not going to start. Now, maybe he's just saying that to be nice to the current left tackle. I don't know. He could still come in and dominate and end up taking the job from somebody. But you've got a right tackle who's not very good, but he's an early first round pick, so he's not getting moved. You've got a left tackle that's actually playing somewhat admirably. Not great, but fine. Again, sort of a Rashid Walker type. And so this is, as far as I can tell, a backup tackle when you have other pressing needs. You need defensive tackle. You need edge. You need a safety. You need some additional corner help. You need some interior offensive line help. Maybe another tight end would be nice. And you took a backup tackle. I mean, listen, best player available, good value, very important position. I can't ding you for that. But it's going to be a little difficult for this to shake out in 2 years, 3 years, to look back and go, man, that was a slam dunk. And the fact that CBS gave them an A minus for a backup tackle, which is their third pick. And by the way, this idea that they're just loaded with talent, they have a lot of needs, a lot of them. Then in the fourth round, maybe my favorite pick, they took Torrey Taylor, punter out of Iowa. And again, I'm fighting with Bears fans, which is fine. Packer fans are swarming. It's the same freaking Packer fans that would come to the defense of Justin Fields. Oh, come on. He's not a bad quarterback. That's not true. Oh, come on. They're not going to be fourth in the division. They obviously got better. They added the wide receivers. You're being ridiculous. Come on. They obviously had a good offseason with the free agent class. It's the same freaking people that come to the... And by the way, their hit rate is zero. Packer fans that have fought me in the defense of the Chicago Bears have never won an argument, ever. Just like Bears fans have never won an argument with me about the Bears. Have I lost arguments? Absolutely. Have I been wrong? Absolutely. Have I ever been wrong about the Bears, at least in the last 3 to 4 years? I don't think so. Maybe once or twice. I don't know. I think there was something specific that I didn't think would turn out very well, and it did, but I mean, it's pretty consistent. They took a punter. Again, what does everybody look at? Well, he's an unbelievably elite punter like we've never seen before, and they needed a punter, therefore perfect. Bro, you've got four picks, and you have serious needs at premium positions, tackle not being one of them, and you took a punter. I know this is your last pick, but undrafted free agency exists. Free agency exists. Go get somebody. Who gives a crap? This is terrible. And in the fourth round, I mean, the fact that the Packers took a kicker when they had a billion picks and took them, what, in the fifth round? And were absolutely crucified for it. And the Bears, who have way more needs, no picks, and took a punter in the fourth round. Punter, by the way, not as valuable as kicker, does not score points. But I'm supposed to bow down and be excited about this for you? Because again, I have to know he's good. I'm not allowed to acknowledge that he might not be. Okay, well, let's take a look at some of the greatest punters in history. And you stop me when you hear a name that makes you think, oh, dude, that guy is a game changer. Okay? Because as we all know, teams that win Super Bowls, first thing that comes to the top of your head is their punter. Top of your head, quick, Chiefs punter, go. Ravens punter, who is it? Any idea? No? Why? It's weird. You know who their quarterback is, don't you? You know who the head coach is. You probably know their receivers, their top receivers, their running backs, some offensive linemen, their pass rushers. You know all that. You don't know their punters? That's weird. They're game changers. That's what everybody talks about all the time. It's how good their punters are. Who are the best punters in the NFL, by the way? And what teams do they play for? Do you know? Because this is such a critically important position. I'm assuming you know all the really good ones, the really bad ones. We've got tons of statistics about punters because everybody wants to track punters. Anyways, you stop me when you hear a game changer here. For reference, Torrey Taylor was consensus 151. Okay? So if you're inside of the top 200, we're probably talking about a similar type of prospect. So let's take a look here. Probably have never had a punter inside the top 200, but let's see if we can get lucky, shall we? First of all, last year's top punter was consensus 250. You know, not nearly as good, but obviously the guy made a massive impact. Bryce Behringer, remember him? Went to that team and is punting and is changing the world. You know. 2022, consensus 100 overall. So better, which is weird because I was told by Bears fans that this is the greatest, maybe the greatest punting prospect of all time, but yet just 2 years ago, there was a guy who was consensus 100 overall. That's Matt Areza. Areza? I don't know. San Diego State. Now, extenuating circumstances, to be sure. Horrible situation. But anything? Nothing? Okay. 2020, consensus 198 overall. Braden Mann. First of all, do me a favor. Tell me what team drafted him, what team he's on now, and what Super Bowls he's helped his team to win. Any ideas? He was drafted by the Jets. He lasted 3 years and then was sent off to Philadelphia. With Philly, he had a 64.7 PFF grade. Back in 2018, we got a guy that was very similar. In fact, there were two top 200 prospects, one of them very similar ranking. We'll start with the second guy, 192 overall out of Rutgers, Ryan Anderson. Ironically enough, he is, I believe, currently a Bear. Initially was with the Giants. But Michael Dixon, punter out of Texas, any idea where he's at right now? He was drafted in the fifth round by the Seattle Seahawks. Any idea how that's going? He's been there the whole time, and he has had three really good years via PFF grade out of six. It's about all I can tell you. You have any big ESPN highlight memories of Michael Dixon? I don't. All right, last one, 2016. There were two right in the same range. I think both of them ranked higher. Alex Kinnall out of Wake Forest was 151. This is 2016. And Tom Hackett, punter out of Utah, was consensus 143 overall. Any life-changing memories of those guys? And again, even if he is the number one punter in the NFL, guess how much I care? That's the larger point here. Top punter last year was drafted in the fifth round, Bradley Pinion. So he was drafted. Bradley Pinion of the Falcons. How the Falcons do? Any ideas? Any super strong? I mean, who is the top? What is the best memory of a season for a punter? By the way, Corey Bohorquez was fifth and J.K. Scott was sixth. Daniel Whelan was eighth. So those are three top 10 guys right there. Nobody gives a crap. This was a god-awful decision. This is one I don't even need to wait 3 years. I will grant to you that he's going to be the best punter in the NFL. And guess what? It's still a bad decision. Then the Chicago Bears traded back into the draft, which I feel like I've never seen that before. They were done with the draft. They packaged picks to come back into the draft because suddenly they care a lot about, you know, draft picks. Unfortunately, they gave away more draft picks to be able to get these picks, which they could have done. They trade back with Roma Dunze, or just not trade away your picks to begin with. You could have had this pick, but they trade back in and grab Austin Booker, edge rusher out of Kansas. Well, you got your edge, which is great. You probably should have gotten that in the first round after you traded back with this spot. In fact, you could have traded back, gotten a significantly better edge, and still gotten a wide receiver, potentially gotten your fifth round pick on top of that, depending on how the trade back goes. Now, again, you can't call me biased because I've been saying this for years and I will die on this hill because I'm absolutely correct. The Bears traded a fourth round pick to get a fifth round pick. That is stupid. Well, it's next year's fourth. So what? It's a fourth. I mean, you guys failed the marshmallow test so unbelievably. It's incredible. You know what that is? It's a test for little tiny children. And you say, would you rather have one marshmallow now or two marshmallows later? And if the kid says, I'll take the one now, they failed the test because two is better than one. Just because it's later doesn't mean it's worse. By the end of the fourth round next year, this will have been a net negative. I just do not understand this, and I don't understand why teams don't take advantage of this. I would do nothing but trade my picks. I would never, what's the point in trading back this year? I could trade back next year and move up an entire round. Like I said, let's just do a thought experiment. Would you rather have two first round picks or a first and a second? Take your time. Take your time. Really think it through, okay? I know how you can get two first round picks instead of a first and a second every single year. You ready? Every year, you trade your second round pick for next year's first round pick. And what you'll have is this year's first and then somebody else's first that traded with you last year, who is too stupid to realize that by next year, this is going to suck a little bit. But because you're not an idiot, you took advantage of that. And now you have two firsts and no second, which is better. But wait, it gets better. Would you rather have two firsts and a second and no third? Because I know how to do that. You trade a third round pick for next year's second. That way, when you come into it, you'll have two firsts, two seconds, and no third. And then all you have to do is make sure you trade that 1 second, you know, for the next year's. But wait, it gets better. Would you like to have that third? Do you understand what I'm saying? This is so stupid. And why nobody does this, just to prove how stupid this is. You can do it in a year. And the fact that you can manipulate the system to this degree and everybody thinks that it's a good idea. The Bears gave up a fourth for a fifth. They're idiots. This is the worst draft I've ever seen. They only had four picks because of their own stupidity. They had Caleb Williams, who was handed to them. That's a C. They had Roma Dunze when they should have traded it. That's a D plus. They took a backup tackle. Screw it. I'll give you a B. I don't even care. Then you took a punter. That's a D at best, if not an F. Then you traded a fourth for a fifth straight up and took an edge rusher. That's an F. Edge rusher's great. That's wonderful. But the trade value is so abysmal, you get an F. This is one of the worst drafts I've ever seen in my entire life. This is the epitome of a GM who's trying to save his job. This is garbage. This is horrific. This is awful. And the fact that they were given, let's look at it. Let me go see this thing JJ sent to me here really quickly. With all that information, let's go through this here. The PFF staff gave them an A. The Pro Football Network staff gave them an A+. Chad Reuter over at NFL.com, A-. Doug Farrar of Touchdown Wire, B+. One of only three to give a B. Rob Mahdi over at AP NFL, A+. Chris Trapasso, A-. Chris Knox at Bleacher Report, A. The staff at Fox Sports, A-. Danny Kelly of The Ringer, A+. Vinny Iyer of Sporting News, A-. Matt Vanderami of Sports Illustrated, A+. Mel Kiper of ESPN, B. The staff over at The Score, an A. Pete Prisco over at CBS, a B. Ryan McChrystal of Sharp Football, A. Nate Davis, USA Today, A+. Charles McDonald at Yahoo, A. Ryan Dunleavy of the New York Post, A. Mark Maskey of the Washington Post, A-. And Thomas Sayer, sideline reporter, A. This is absolute pathetic garbage. Forget the Packers, right? If you want to give the Packers a less, in fact, they got almost straight Bs. And let's even factor in that pretty much everybody got an A or a B. Except like the word, like, so for example, Rob Mahdi over at the AP NFL, his worst grade was a C-. He gave out two C's. The worst grade anybody gave of any team was Charles McDonald over at Yahoo, gave a D-. So the scale is basically a C, a B, or an A. So giving the Packers a B, I don't even hate that. I think, you know, you got to take into account the massive amount of picks, which is in the win column. I think they've done a great job as far as needs are concerned, especially for a media that seems to only care about did you address your needs. I feel like they should be getting an A. But then if you look at positional value, it could be a little bit of a hit despite taking, you know, offensive tackle in the first round and whatnot. But fine, I'm not going to sit here and say they had the best draft. Without even looking through it, I'm positive I can find a better one. Everybody seems to love the Pittsburgh Steelers draft, so I could potentially go that route. But what I am telling you definitively, and I don't know about the Lions or the Minnesota Vikings at this particular point in time. I haven't gone through it with a fine-tooth comb yet, but I can tell you with 100% certainty that I have never seen a draft as putridly horrific as the Chicago Bears in my entire life. The Bears' overall GPA was a 3.87, second behind only the Steelers, who had a 3.92. Absolutely unbelievable. The Packers came in 18th with a 3.03. Again, I'm not going to argue that because I have no idea. I would have, in order to argue that the Packers should be higher or lower, I would have to look at all 32 and rank them myself. I obviously haven't done that. And I know for a fact that none of these people have done the requisite amount of work required to actually hand out grades for all these teams. It would be impossible. Other than a cursory look of here's their needs, here's how they drafted on the draft board, I'm going to give them a B+. I promise you that's at least 70% of these guys did exactly that. There might be a couple that had a more stringent way of doing it, which is probably nothing more than the value of the pick, which is consensus board minus, you know, where you took the player. Anyways, why don't we go ahead and take a break? We'll come back and very quickly look at the Lions and the Vikings drafts. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
513, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, so the Detroit Lions, who apparently had a significantly worse draft than the Chicago Bears, I mean, just trash compared to the Bears. They end up drafting Terrion Arnold at 24, followed by Ennis Rakestraw right off the bat. I mean, and they're given Bs. I mean, I just look, I know they had to move to get Terrion Arnold, but based on the information we had in terms of value, this is a remarkable value. It's a position of, it's a high value position, and it's a major need for the Lions. Now, in terms of is he a good player, we won't know that, but for all the information we have to work with right now, this is as good of an A as you can find. Now, as far as the trade compensation, that would be where you would downgrade the Lions. The package that they put together, if you base it on the Rich Hill trade chart, which is the chart I would say most closely aligns to what NFL teams expect, they should have been able to get up to about, let's say, 19. They jumped to pick 24. It was a bad value. Now, that doesn't even begin to really address, you know, from an analytical standpoint. That's just what teams expect for compensation. So they overpaid based on the going rate. If you actually apply analytics to whether or not this was a good decision, like I said, there's never going to be a scenario where a trade-up is a good decision. I mean, there's no NFL team that would accept what the analytics say that you should do. So that's automatic. So the fact that it was bad, even based on, you know, the Rich Hill chart, which, by the way, what was the surplus value here? They gave up a third-round pick worth of value. They overpaid. They only gave up a third-round pick. So they essentially paid double, which in reality, they actually paid more than double the price. They needed 100 points worth. They gave up 225 points worth. You say, well, why would they do that? It's because it's all they really had. A fourth round wouldn't have been enough. So they gave up the third they had, even though the third they had was too much. So they overpaid. Followed that up again with Ennis Rakestraw. I like Rakestraw. Corner, again, very valuable position. He was valued at 38th overall. The Lions got him at 61. Then it went off the rails a little bit. They went and got Giovanni Manu in the fourth round. Tackle, which is important. But as I'm sure you're aware, offensive line, not necessarily the biggest need, although it's possible they're going to kick him inside. I don't know. He's 6'8", 350, which is a very odd. You look at 350 and you go, yeah, he's going to go inside. You see 6'8", and you're like, oh, never mind. But he was consensus 333. So there's that. Their second, fourth round pick, they got Sion Vaki. According to the consensus board, it was a slight reach, but not anything necessarily significant. I certainly see no issue with that. They got Brian Branch. He's sort of their safety slot hybrid guy. They need some help at safety outside of that. Follow that up with Mekhi Wingo, defensive tackle. Probably not the biggest need in the world. With Alim McNeil and DJ Reader, that I would say defensive tackle is one of their stronger positions. Edge would have been much more significant, but you need a rotation, top guy, whatever, go ahead and do it. Then they took Christian Mahogany, interior offensive lineman. Again, offensive line is already relatively strong, at least in the short term, but I think the guard position in the future is going to need to be addressed, so I don't necessarily have an issue with that. The only real big miss here that I can see is they did not get an edge rusher in this class at all. And I think they really need to get somebody opposite. I mean, I know they went and just got Marcus Davenport for whatever that's worth. Guy played, what, two entire weeks last year? Week four, week five, with a 55 PFF grade. I mean, I'm sure he's better than that, but, you know, could use a long-term option. But whatever, it's something. In the meantime, they'll address that at a later date. I mean, they're putting together an incredible team. And I would say they addressed corner. I don't know that much else is reasonable to expect. Maybe Vaki starts, maybe. Outside of that, I mean, even Rakestraw is not necessarily a guarantee. I mean, Terrion Arnold isn't either, but I mean, I don't know that. You might, out of this draft class, get Terrion Arnold, and that's roughly it. Mahogany's not going to win the starting job. Wingo might be a rotational guy. Vaki could possibly start, but it's not a guarantee. Manu's not going to play. So I don't hate it. I like it better than their draft class last year. And the Minnesota Vikings, now they massively overpaid to come up and get J.J. McCarthy. I mean, the overpay was astounding. And on one hand, you can look at it and say, yeah, but it's for a quarterback, so it's worth it. Okay, we can put that in our back pocket after we see how J.J. McCarthy materializes, what he ends up becoming. It'll also be interesting to see, considering everyone seemed to acknowledge J.J. McCarthy needs to sit for a while, are they just going to throw him into the fire? And if they do, is that going to end in disaster, et cetera, et cetera? So that's part of the calculus. You know, everybody's trashing the Falcons because they drafted a guy that's going to sit for a while, and I have no idea why we're trashing that. I mean, it just seems like if you have a good, solid, responsible draft, you got a bad grade. If you just went and got the flashy positions and did a bunch of flashy, you know, you got a quarterback, you got a wide receiver, whatever, then you're a genius and you get good grades. If you draft a quarterback and sit them, though, no, it's stupid. It's like, come on. Whatever. The problem with the whole trade-up thing, though, is it's already essentially come out that they were lied to, and they not only massively overpaid, they massively overpaid to move up one spot. So they just forfeited draft picks to move up one spot, and they didn't need to do it. They were essentially getting played, being told that, yeah, there's a bunch of people trying to come up. You better come up or you're going to lose your guy. It wasn't true. But can't be mad at the J.J. McCarthy pick. He went later than I think a lot of people were expecting. If you look at the value that they gave up compared to what the value is that people were expecting, it's probably less. Not that that necessarily matters. That's not how we calculate this situation. But still pretty decent value for McCarthy. They took Dallas Turner, the edge rusher, which I think is a solid pick. I like Turner. He wasn't super popular. We'll see what that turns into, but it's hard to dock, you know, at pick 17 getting Dallas Turner, which is a premier position and a position of need. Then they take another position of need that's a very important position at pick 108, Kyree Jackson. They take tackle Walter Rouse. That one's a little bit iffy. I'm curious if they're going to swing him inside because they have tackles locked up for quite a while. They did take kicker in the sixth round, Will Ricard. Now, I'm not going to be nearly as hard on the Vikings as I am with the Bears, because I don't necessarily mind drafting special teams. It's probably not the best thing to do, but I don't always hate it. It is a very important thing. Coupled very distinct differences. Number one, in my opinion, and I could be corrected on this, kicker's more important than punter. Number two, this is the sixth round, not the fourth round. And number three, they had plenty of picks. They had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They had 7 picks, which is the average number. 2 of them were in the first round. Now, granted, the next one was 4, and then after that was 6. So they only had 2 in the top 100, and they had one other pick that wasn't, you know, 6th, 7th round. Which I think also probably should get factored into this, because they traded a couple different times to be able to get these players, and as a result, kind of forfeited a lot of picks. And they need a lot of stuff, which is a negative. You can't be throwing away all your picks when you need, you know, defensive tackle, you need edge, you need corner, you need guard, you need center, you need a quarterback, you know, potentially linebacker. I know the guys you had played well, but I don't know if I would trust that necessarily. Safety is going to be a need, even if it's not necessarily this second. Cam Bynum seems decent, but what do you have outside of that? So, you know, trading up and giving away a lot of picks is a high-risk proposition. And if Dallas Turner does not pan out, or if J.J. McCarthy does not pan out, you know, so the Vikings in total, they gave up 129 and 157 to go from 11 to 10. They got back 203. Then they traded 23, 167, and a 2025 third and fourth round picks, which 2025, they're screwed, to get to 17. So, I mean, in total, they gave up 1, 2, 3 picks this year and a third and a fourth next year. I mean, that's brutal. I mean, that's a lot of value to get a quarterback and a pass rusher, not to mention you already came into this with 2 first round picks. That's just what you gave up in addition? That's crazy. Meanwhile, so you got the Bears who need to trade back, don't. The Vikings give up all their picks. The Lions give up too much. The first time the Packers enter the discussion, they trade back in the second round. They've already got, they go from what, 11 to 13 picks or something stupid? And I don't mean stupid in a negative way. I just mean ridiculous. Let's see what else we got. So then the Lions did it again. They gave up a 2025 third round. I'm just going through the trades here. 2025 third round pick to go to 126. 126 is the very back of the fourth round. They gave up a third round pick to get one of the last picks in the fourth round. And that's the one they used to take Giovanni Manu. I'm sorry, never mind. I changed my mind. You guys are stupid. You cannot trade. So dumb. So dumb. Lions trade up again. 132. Let's see. So they give 164, 201, and a 2025 fourth round pick to get 132 and 210. 132 is a fifth round pick. You not only gave up a fourth round for a fifth round, you gave up more on top of that. I'm sorry, I changed my mind. The Lions had a garbage draft. This is pathetic. This is terrible. These trades are abysmal. You gave up a third and a fourth round pick for next year. Come on, man. Ay, ay, ay. So the NFC North and trades, I mean, the Packers, I didn't look at the value. We can check that tomorrow. The Packers really didn't do much. They traded back early to accumulate massive value. And then in the later rounds, they used small amounts of value to move up tiny amounts, right? Because a small trade back in the second round is worth a lot more in the fifth, sixth, seventh round. And that's essentially what they did. They traded back early, still got the players that they wanted, and then were able to maneuver as much as they wanted in the later rounds, which is especially important now that we're talking about this whole NIL thing, where apparently the back end of the draft, it's getting really thin. So you need to be able to be mobile to come up and grab players, because there's not going to be many players to be had. But the drafting, or the trading for the Lions, the Vikings, and the Bears, appalling. The Bears not trading back and then forfeiting, what was it, a third for a fourth or a fourth for a fifth or something? I think it was a third for a fourth is sickening. The Vikings and the Lions also did it. Dumbest thing ever. The Bears had the worst draft. Then it would probably be, I didn't even finish it. It was Michael Juergens, guard for the Vikings, and then Levi Drake, defensive lineman for the Vikings. It's hard because the Vikings, I think, had more picks. I think I like the Lions more if we just leave the trades out of it. It's tough. I think overall the Lions and Vikings drafts, just leaving aside trades and whatnot, were pretty solid in terms of high value, largely positions of need. I think the Lions covered more of their bases because they have less needs. So I guess I'll give them the edge. But yeah, that's rough, man. Anyways, I'm going to go. You guys have a good rest of your day. I will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one. Bye-bye. On the shores of Lake Michigan, the bears are growling low. Dreams of a savior from the draft, but oh, they never show. Sifting through the prospects, but their luck's always thin. Another year, another miss. Can't seem to ever win. Draft day blues got us dying our news. Bears, Lions, Vikings always lose. Drafting in the dark and they miss the mark. Oh, the heartbreak starts with a draft day spark. Up in Motor City where the engines roar and hiss, Lions in their draft room, but it's always hit or miss. A king to lead the pride is all they really ask. Instead, they get a jester who can't even wear the mask. In the land of Vikings, they sail across the board, hoping for a warrior, but they can't afford. The crowd is getting restless, the cold begins to bite. Another frozen season, no playoffs in sight. So here's to the teams with the broken draft schemes. May the future hold more than just shattered dreams.